Chapter 41. Question mark, question mark, question mark. Before question mark, question mark, question mark. The music was raucous to Harrow Hark's ears. The stringed instruments, viols, a piano, all played in carefully tasteful modulation, but to her affrighted senses it seemed as though they were blasting full bore directly into her tympanic chambers. It was very warm inside the amphitheatre, and despite the kindness of the candlelight, despite the electric lights being dimmed to an attractive submission, playing out over the assorted massacre of the crowd in its eye-hurting panoply of colour, her eyes still felt like they were bleeding. The Reverend Daughter's veil of office had been pinned back upon her head, precisely where it was no use to her. The crowd, at least, thinned out considerably near their delegation. No matter the bewilderment of the occasion, no matter the crush in the room, nobody really wanted to get close to the House of the Ninth. Harrow Hark was glad for this on two levels. One, because she hated the press of people. Two, because in the dimness and with distance, there was less chance for other guests to notice the shabbiness of their finery. The lacework of her robes had been patched with thread as close to the original black as possible, but not quite matching, as was the perpetual trouble with blacks. The brocade of her skirts was stiff from bad storage. She was not ashamed of the ancient diadem and torque collar she wore. Both had been taken gently from the corpse of an ancestor, before that ancestor had sighed into powder under the beam of the torchlight. But she did not like what their patches of rust signified of their poverty. Harrow Hark fretted with the edges of her veil. "It's no use the damn thing being down," said her captain, sotto voce. "I do not intend to compete," said Harrow Hark, not moving her lips, but inclining her face very slightly toward the woman next to her. "If I did, I would never compete with my face."
"Yes, but you might as well have one," said the older woman calmly. "That's the first thing Her Divine Highness will look for in a bride, presence of a face. It's a precondition of attraction."
"That is not why we are here. Unlike every other house scion present, I will not flaunt my goods in the shop window."
"Emperor knows what we'd even flaunt," grunted Aiglamine.
The other seven houses present were flaunting as though they were birds in a particularly baroque mating season. Her so-called cavalier primary took great interest. He jotted verses on a scrap of flimsy that he palmed discreetly into his pocket every time her gaze fell on him. The other houses had mingled into a spectrum of colours, interweaving in the dances like a living drift of spangles. Clean cohort whites with coloured ribbons vaunting colour on the pips or wrist, long dresses in iridescent white, a simpering tactic, with hued wreaths on the head to denote the house. Necromancers in robes of all kinds, none of them practical. All except for the sixth house, who did not seem to be represented among the dancers, but sat in a grey puddle by the wall in wallflower blessedness, as though they were a communal gawky child who could not find a partner. They all wore the same dead dove greys and chatted among themselves. If the situation had been different, Harrow Hark might have made an introductory approach to them, but she had other things to think about. One tall, astonishingly built third house princess had chosen to sit among their number like a butterfly in a grey bog. She wore a silk robe in gold and breeches that showed off a calf too fit to be called a necromancer's, and she was holding a glass of champagne and laughing at something she was being told. The rest of the noble house of Ida made intermittent attempts to chivy her back, in case being seen among the sixth house proclaimed her too hopeless to win the attention of Her Divine Highness, but the third princess kept waving them off. Harrow Hark's anticipation was at a fever pitch by the time anyone approached her. She did not know why her heart was beating so hard. She did not know why she was afraid, other than that the crowd was unmanageable and that there was too much noise and light. She knew her eyes were too wide within her sacramental paint. The elegant skull, called simply the chain, which she had been practicing for months, when a couple approached without a retinue. A man and a woman, the lady with the hint of a necromancer's build. She was arm in arm with the man, and he appeared to be eating a canapé on a stick with his other hand, and so Harrowhark refused to look at him. The lady wore a deep cocoa satin gown with a train, and when she stood before Harrowhark, she coughed discreetly into one buff glove. The simplicity of the gown revealed little about her, but the cut said more, and the cursory little gold tiara perched on the gleaming brown braids of hair said a lot and loudly.
"Lady Abigail Pent," said Harrowhark, who had been practicing that as well.
"To be honest," said Abigail, "I'm quite sorry to crash this one, as I would love to see where this mixer goes."
"I also," said Harrowhark's cavalier primary from behind her shoulder.
Magnus had finished his canapé and added enthusiastically,
"Agreed, this is top. Have you ever eaten party food before, Lady Harrowhark? Because if you haven't, this is a very good approximation. No taste, but incredibly salty."
Harrow said frigidly,
"Pardon?"
before she remembered that she could not have known Lady Abigail Pent by sight.
"This still isn't how it happens," said the fifth.